Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Rimebold. Jeff, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, man. I'm good. We're struggling a little bit right now, but we're a young team, and you see improvement every week, so you gotta stay with the process when you go through things like this.
What's the record then at the moment?
Well, we're 0-3. We played actually three of the best teams in the league, and we've been on the road two of the three weeks, and we're starting six rookies on defense.
Wow.
I think two or three more on offense. So it's one of those kind of situations where, you know, we played about as good as you can play for 25 minutes the other night on defense. Had three interceptions, two sacks, a fumble recovery. But as always is the case with young guys, we have inopportune breakdowns at the wrong time, and they're learning to play. It's just, you know, it's a process you got to go through. So you got to keep coaching them and stay positive, and that's all you can do.
You're earning your coaching corn then for certain. Plenty actually to talk about. I thought this was going to be a quiet time. So last week we took a week off. I was out on the road with seven NFL players in London. That was a lot of fun to be with the likes of Tyrann Mathieu, Brandon Williams from the Ravens. So that was a good week, but we thought it might be a bit quiet this week. But we've had quite a bit of news already, Jeff. We'll get to Dave Gettleman's firing by the Carolina Panthers, getting rid of their general manager just 9 days before training camp. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But the deadline for the franchise tags and the long-term deals to be signed has passed, and there are no long-term deals for Kirk Cousins, the quarterback of the Washington Redskins, Le'Veon Bell, the running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Tremaine Johnson, the cornerback for the Los Angeles Rams. Let's start with Kirk Cousins, Jeff. This is an interesting one on so many levels because he has decided to go year to year. And let's start. We'll get into some of the numbers and what was offered and why Kirk has decided to go away from that. But first of all, very publicly, President Bruce Allen has come out and almost thrown his quarterback under the bus, in my opinion, Jeff. He certainly made it very, very clear that the team offered Kirk Cousins a long-term deal and that he didn't want to know about it. And that, to me, as they're about to head into training camp and into the season, is a head-scratcher. What did you think of that, first of all?
Well, I think, you know, this is some of the frustration of the negotiation process coming out in Bruce Allen. And it's unfortunate that it, you know, gets to be public, because now it can get messy and, you know, animosity and all that. I think Kirk Cousins is making a decision that he feels is best for he and his family. And obviously the Redskins want to tie him up for in the long term because he's a rising star at the quarterback position. But I think he also realizes that there are a number of suitors out there, and you know his agent is certainly no dumb guy. So he sees how much the value of a franchise, if you use that term, franchise quarterback is, and Cousins is one of the better quarterbacks in the league right now. And I think that it may be also, Neil, you gotta also factor in, you know, what the stability situation is in Washington, you know, where, you know, there are so many factors that play into it beyond the money. And obviously the money is a big part of it, but also is, you know, your relationship with your coaches, the status of the organization, your opportunities to win. All of those factors come into play when you make a decision like this.
Jeff, it felt like in 2016, Kirk still had to prove himself to the Washington Redskins. And maybe in 2017, the Redskins now have to sell themselves to Kirk Cousins because he has proven himself back-to-back 4,000-yard seasons, almost a 5,000-yard season last year. And waiting with open arms, potentially, will be the San Francisco 49ers. They're going to have $70 million in cap space next year. Cleveland will have $60 million. The Jets will have $80 million. The Rams have $60 million. Arizona have 40. Maybe they move on from Carson Palmer. Jacksonville will have $40 million in space. Minnesota have $55 million if Sam Bradford or Teddy Bridgewater isn't the answer. And Buffalo have more than $40 million. There will be suitors for Kirk Cousins.
Oh, there's no question, Neil. You know, again, you talk about all those teams and, you know, the money that they have available in free agency. So, you know, this is, again, one, as you say, it's now, I think, more incumbent on the Redskins to prove that, you know, that they're an organization and, you know, an environment in the locker room and all of the things that he wants to be a part of, that they're committed to, you know, doing what it takes to win at the highest level, and that's the Super Bowl. And I think, you know, that all of those other teams, there's so much public information now, and, you know, the agents really understand the whole deal, and they understand how the game's played, and it's a risk versus reward. Obviously, if he takes the long-term deal in Washington, there's less risk because, again, if he's taking one-year deals and he gets hurt, there's, you know, again, you gotta understand that too. Mm. But I think when you look at, you know, he has another year like he's had the last two, you know, obviously it's going to be a bonanza on payday when free agency comes.
I wonder if he even needs to have that, does he, Jeff? They could make the argument that he lost a couple of receivers, he had a new offensive coordinator. If he has an average year, does he still hit the open market as a, you know, as a potential franchise quarterback who's going to make a lot of money? Does he have to have a big year?
Well, you know, you think about it, like the money that Mike Glennon got in Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a guy that has very little. I mean, when you look at bodies of work, his is much smaller in terms of positive plays in the National Football League, and he gets paid what he got paid. Certainly, a guy with Kirk's track record is going to stand to, you know, have a great payday no matter what, as long as he's not hurt. Because, again, as you say, you can rationalize away a, you know, 2,500-yard year or whatever. But I just really think that he's going to have another year like he's had. I think the focus of that offense and you know, his ability, and there are enough talented players around him that he'll have a good year, and then you're going to see a guy break the bank when it comes time for free agency.
Yeah, I feel like he wants out, Jeff. I feel like he's playing the system and he's playing his way through this year-to-year thing. One thing that Bruce Allen didn't mention in the statement, he did say that Kirk would have been the second highest paid player in NFL history in terms of money per year. What he didn't mention was that it was essentially a 6-year deal that Washington were offering, a 5-year extension on top of this year's franchise tag, but only 2 of those years would have been guaranteed. After that, they had basically 4 1-year options, which gave the team control again, and it goes back to that leverage. Kirk Cousins wasn't willing to give that leverage back to the Washington Redskins.
Yeah, you know, and again, sometimes when you start talking about dollar value of a contract, that can be a little bit, you know, a little bit foggy, or, you know, because you got to understand what matters to the guys or what matters to the player is the guaranteed dollars.
Yeah.
That's what really is the important thing. Because you see those deals that are, you know, like long-term deals, and the money signing bonuses spread out over the length of the deal, and, you know, then they can cut the player after 3 years, and really all that they have to pay now is the residual part of the signing bonus that, you know, that's pushed over a 7 or 8 year deal. The clubs know that they're never that player's never going to get to 8 years or 6 years or whatever it is. So, you know, that's their way of mitigating their risk and you know, using the salary cap to their advantage. But the player, again, he has to look at what the guaranteed dollars are, and that's the bottom line for a player. And apparently, in this situation, Cousins and his agent didn't feel like it. You know, it was worth giving up, as you say, the power back to the Redskins.
Yeah, Washington guaranteed $53 million of that $110 million extension. But Kirk Cousins, Jeff, has already earned, over the last year and this year, he will have earned $43, $44 million in terms of the tag. Next year, Washington will have to pay him either $28 if they transition tag him, or it could be $35. Well, if it's $35, then Kirk Cousins is guaranteed $78, $79 million over 3 years. So you can see why his people would say, let's go year to year. I just got one other thing on this, Jeff, which I think is interesting. When Bruce Allen goes public with the kind of, distaste for what Kirk Cousins has done, it's funny because little stories come out. We look for the animosity. We look for the signs of what could be a storm brewing. And sometimes it's hard to say Kirk. It sounds like you're saying Kurt, but there's a story doing the rounds already that Bruce Allen called Kirk Cousins Kurt 5 times in that statement. And they're saying it's a sign of disrespect. And when we get to what happened to John Dorsey in Kansas City and what we're going to talk about with Dave Gettleman and how you disrespect players, I mean, it's just fuel for the fire. It just, when you go public with it, we're now looking for every little thing. And because he said Kurt and not Kirk, we've made a thing of it.
Yeah, and again, I think this is one of the things that you look at. You look at the great organizations. You look at, for example, the Patriots. Mm-hmm. You know, and they've gone through these things with, where, you know, players won't take pay cuts or, you know, salary dispute or whatever. But very, very little of it gets in the public. There's very little for public consumption, at least from the Patriots standpoint. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is the way for a general manager or a club to handle those kinds of things, because you always want to stay above the mudslinging. Once you get into that situation, it's a no-win deal for you. I think Gettleman's found that out. I think Bruce Allen will find that out, because, again, as you say, Neil, in this information-rich age that we live in, everything is, you know, picked apart and dissected, and what did he mean by this, and he calls his quarterback Kurt as opposed to Kirk, and, you know, like that, how disrespectful that must. I mean, it just creates this swarm of things. I mean, you know, I see it here in our deal, because the cameras are always on you in pro football. And our quarterback, you know, got upset after a series, and, you know, it was caught on television. Well, immediately now there's this, you know, oh, there's dissension in the ranks, and, you know, he's not happy with the play call, all that kind of stuff that we in the media, and I consider myself in the media, we in the media trump and blow up, and really it takes it into a realm that really isn't there. And so, but again, the best way to not have that controversy is to say nothing.
I think
stay above the fray.
Yeah, and I think, well, I'd like to get into that when we talk about Dave Gettleman in a minute, Jeff, because I think you can have power as a general manager, but you still are held accountable for how you treat your players, because your players ultimately go out on the field on Sundays and play the games. And I think we saw that with John Dorsey. John Dorsey, there was never anything about John Dorsey, you know, being on shaky ground in Kansas City, and then, you know, a week or so after he cuts Jeremy Maclin by voicemail, he's getting fired. So, you know, you wonder about how you treat people. And I think Bruce Allen and Kirk Cousins is going to be an interesting one to watch. So let's talk about that in a few minutes. But let's move on to Le'Veon Bell for a second, because he also didn't sign a long-term deal. They were negotiating right to the very end. Couldn't get it done. He's going to play under a $12.1 million tag this season if he signs the franchise tag. He hasn't signed it yet, Jeff, and he could sit out the start of training camp. He could sit out all of training camp and turn up the day before the season starts if he wishes. Reportedly, Pittsburgh offered a long-term deal worth $12 million per year, but there was little guaranteed beyond year one. Is that because they're worried about injuries and suspensions? Because Le'Veon Bell has had both.
Yeah, I think that's... You know, from the club standpoint, again, we always talk about risk versus reward, right? I mean, obviously, he is one of the, you know, preeminent players at his position in the league, but he has a history of both injury, as you say, and, you know, off the field things that have cost him games. So you factor all that in as you decide how much money you're going to pay a guy, and, you know, they know Le'Veon Bell much better than you and I do,
sure.
And so you got to believe that when the Steelers, you know, put in safeguards, if you will, into that contract, like those series of one-year deals, is because they have a concern. You're also talking about a guy at a high-risk position. You know, the running backs, you know, there aren't a lot of them that play a long time because they get, you know, they get hit on their darn near every play.
Mm.
So, you know, that's a situation, again, where the club is trying to, you know, do what's fiscally responsible and, you know, in terms of the cap and their dollars spent on a guy, you know, and because dead money kills you. I mean, we saw what it did to the Cowboys, you know, after their Super Bowl run, and, you know, they had money, huge deals in guys that weren't even there anymore, and, you know, it really hamstrung the Cowboys for a number of years.
How do you see it playing out, Jeff? Because Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid like a running back and a wide receiver. He sees himself as that dual threat, somebody who's involved in the running game and the passing game. We know traditionally that Pittsburgh don't really negotiate during the season, so he's either going to have to suck it up and get on with it, or he's going to hold out. And then I remember Logan Mankins a few years back with the Patriots. He went into like week 9 or 10, didn't he? I think you can basically go late into the season, and then if you want to try and accrue that year, so you get the year of the pension and all of that stuff, you have to at some point sign with the team and play. But I don't know. What do you think? Is he just going to try and sit out training camp and reduce that injury risk? How's this one going to work out?
You know, this is one of those deals where, you know, each side waits for the other side to blink.
Right.
And I think my personal feeling is this will continue on right up to, and I don't be surprised if it doesn't get into training camp.
Mm-hmm.
I would be surprised, frankly, Neil, if it gets into the season and he's still sitting. But again, you know, players hate training camp anyway. So it's one of those situations where he knows the offense. He's been in the offense. It's not like it's going to take him, as long as he's in shape, it's not like he's going to take him a long time once he gets back to be able to play. It's just what it does, you know, it's always about the trickle-down effect, the residual effect of what happens. Now he's not there, you know, that the media is now focused on that as opposed to the team. Then you know, Roethlisberger, I'm sure, is going to be frustrated because he doesn't have one of his most talented weapons around him. He knows his window's closing. This is a team that, you know, is in the Super Bowl conversation. You really hate to see this if you're a Steeler fan, because you just don't want the controversy swirling around you as you go into training camp. And you know what, Neil? This is kind of anti-Steeler, if you will, because they typically don't have these kinds of issues. And, again, it's one of those things that will be a distraction if the Steelers allow it to become a distraction. And that's Tomlin's, you know, that's going to be another challenge for Tomlin, is how to keep his team focused. And you don't want to alienate the player while he's, you know, while you're going through this process, you know. So again, what you say in the media is really, really, really important. And I think, you know, that dovetails into what we're talking about with Dorsey and Gettleman and, how you treat people. It's a people business. That's the bottom line. These are people, and they're people with big egos and big dollars. And you know, sometimes it gets frustrating, but you got to swallow a little bit and say, hey, you know, and whatever you say, that it ain't coming back, right? You can't say, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it, or anything like that, because it's going to be blasted everywhere in the media.
I think you make a good point there, Jeff, because Pittsburgh traditionally have tied up their star men before it's got to this stage where they get franchise tagged and all of what that entails. So it does make you wonder if there's a little bit of a trust issue there, and maybe Le'Veon Bell has to toe the line eventually. You know, I don't know if a long-term deal comes in training camp. He may end up signing the tag and saying, okay, I'm going to play this year and try and kind of keep clean. And because obviously, if they've signed everyone else up and they haven't signed you up, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, and you know, again, if you look at the organization historically, now they have lost some of their star players over time. You know, Joey Porter left, you know, Kevin Green left. But they're also, you know, a lot of the Troy Polamalu, Hines Ward kind of guys that played their entire careers in Pittsburgh. And that's kind of you go back all the way to the Steel Curtain days. That's kind of the way that organization's built. And, you know, those guys, there's a real, as you talk to NFL alums, Neil, I think you feel it, and I know I certainly do when we go to the Super Bowl. There's a really strong bond and a real strong feel from the Steeler players about that organization, about the Rooney family, and about the city of Pittsburgh. So you know, this is kind of a unique one, or not a unique one, maybe an unusual one.
Let's just move on. So the Rams tried to trade Tremaine Johnson. They didn't get that done during the offseason. They're now going to pay him $16.7 million under the franchise tag. He made $13.9 under the tag last year. Jeff, just quickly on Tremaine Johnson, there's a lot of talk that he doesn't necessarily fit Wade Phillips' system. I mean, what do you see there with Johnson? That's a lot of money to pay somebody who's probably not going to be there in 2018.
Yeah, it is. And you know, again, this is one of those deals where, you know, you make a switch, you make a change, and you know, schematic change, and you know, there are certain guys that don't fit. And you know, again, if they're high paid guys with guaranteed money and long term deals, Now the challenge for the coach is, how do I make my system fit the athlete that I have? Mm. And again, you try, obviously it was, they were, the Rams were interested in moving him if they could move him. But, you know, again, all the other NFL teams, all 31 other teams are going to, you know, they know the deal too, right? Mm. They know the, you know, the lack of fit. They know, you know, the issues. They know all that. So it's not, the Rams certainly aren't in a leverage position when you're trying to make a trade.
We had a question from the mailbag from Chris Brophy, which I think we've kind of covered off. I want to get a few mailbag questions in today. He was questioning why the Redskins publicly declared their offer to Kirk Cousins. We've kind of covered that off. So we'll move on to the Dave Gettleman firing, because this is very interesting and worrying if you're a Carolina Panthers fan. 9 days before the start of training camp, he'd been reportedly on shaky ground with ownership ever since he let Josh Norman go last spring and summer. This follows on from President Danny Morrison resigning in February. Assistant General Manager Brandon Bean took the Buffalo job not so long ago. Jeff, they've been talking about how Gettleman's management style wasn't working. And again, it goes back to that point where I think I was trying to, you know, it's how you deal with people, as you said, but also the ones that he seems to have not been able to get along with, he's kind of got out of town. So whether it was D'Angelo Williams, Steve Smith Sr., but most recently and perhaps most importantly, Josh Norman, you know, if you're ownership, you're probably asking, why can't we coexist with these star players? And it's come back to kind of bite Dave Gettleman. Your first thoughts on this move so close to training camp?
Well, I think that the thing that's really unfortunate if you're a Panther fan is the fact that Brandon Bean was a rising star inside your organization.
Right.
He was kind of the one that they saw as a, you know, a future general manager. Certainly now he leaves for Buffalo, and your logical replacement to keep continuity in the organization is obviously to promote from within, and Bean is not there anymore. He's in Buffalo. So, again, I think it's unfortunate, the timing, again, if you're a Carolina Panther fan. I think the reaction to this was really interesting. I saw a tweet from Steve Smith today. Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of a, I know how you feel, Dave, with a big smile on his face. And, you know, another NFL player mentioned that he will now take the Carolina Panthers off of a list of teams that will never play for
him. That was D'Angelo Williams, Jeff, yeah.
Yeah. So, again, when you see those kinds of things, you know that how you treat people is never a secret, particularly in the National Football League.
Right.
Because in pro football, you know, again, there are, I don't know, 1,500 pro football players or whatever there are down in the NFL, and there's another, you know, 400 of them up here. So you're talking about 2,000 jobs in the whole world. It's a very small network, and everybody knows everybody, and everybody talks about, and all the agents know each other, and all the agents talk about how did it go with your negotiations here or there, how did they treat your player, again. So when you gain the reputation of a guy who's hard to get along with, or a guy that you know, doesn't have great people skills, or a guy that, you know, is disrespectful or in one way or another to the player, or the environment in the building isn't what, you know, it's divisive, or any of those things, that's not going to be kept secret. And I think, you know, I've known Dave for a long time. I knew him back in his Giant days before he went to Carolina. As a matter of fact, you know, our buddy Matt Schauger, who works for the Giants, that's how, you know, I made a call to Dave to get Matt an internship with the Giants back, shoot, Neil, that must have been, what, 2003?
Yeah, so around that time.
Dave has that kind of Northeast abrasiveness to his personality. Mm-hmm. If you know, again, if you don't know how to take him, and, you know, he's kind of a, you know, again, I think his frankness sometimes is, you know, a little grating on people, and you know, I'm sure that's not been made secret amongst the players, because the players, again, like, you know this, because you deal with those guys, you travel with those guys.
Yeah,
they are very, 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 very tightly knit fraternity, and they all talk and they all discuss all of those kinds of things.
Yeah, Jeff, I think this is a fascinating subject generally to get into, and sometimes on Inside the Huddle we stop on one subject, and I think it is good to dig into this this week. I mean, he was credited with cleaning up their salary cap mess. He came in really strong. He called out Cam Newton and said he needed to perform better. But he clearly dumped Steve Smith Sr. when there were still miles on the clock. And we saw D'Angelo Williams last year with Le'Veon Bell out. He had a good start to the season, proved he could still do it. There's no doubt Josh Norman can still play. So all of those moving on from those guys are kind of black marks. But let's widen this out. Let's broaden this out. We talk about head coach, Jeff, and we say it's not just about X's and O's and calling plays. It's about how you command the room, how you deal with your players, you get the pulse of your team. And there are a lot of scouts who go into being general managers. And being a general manager is not sitting in a dark room watching film, is it? And we are now seeing this more and more. And it's certainly played out in the last few months about those man management skills that you talk about.
Yeah, and you know, again, if it was all about numbers, right? It was all about crunching numbers and salary cap. And, you know, you'd hire accountants to be general managers. But, you know, the reality of it is, and the same thing conversely, if it was all about being able to evaluate talent, well, then you'd hire nothing but scouts to be general managers. But it's way bigger than that. It's about running an organization, and that means creating an environment in the building that's conducive to winning. That's the number one thing. Then number two, working within the parameters of the organization. Now you're talking about the salary cap, and then weighing when you make salary cap decisions, and everybody has to make tough decisions. I mean, you see it every year in this league. But the bottom line is, now when you talk about losing, you know, those three guys, you know, you're talking about D'Angelo Williams, you're talking about Steve Smith, you're talking about Josh Norman, you're talking about those are your star players. And the fan base, and even inside the locker room, when it gets to be, there's animosity between those guys, open animosity between those guys as they leave, well, that sends shockwaves and ripples into the locker room. Because if you're treating your stars like that,
right?
You know, again, the guy that's the not star, just the core player, he looks at it and goes, man, if they do that to Josh Norman, how the heck are they going to treat me?
Well, Jeff, that's a really good point. Let's just sort of look at that, because he almost made a point, and Jimmy Johnson was the other way when he was with the Dallas Cowboys. He openly said, if you're a third string running back, you're not getting treated the same way as Emmitt Smith. That's just the reality. It seems that Dave Gettleman went after the big names to stamp his authority on the team. John Beeson was a star linebacker for this team, and he's come out this week and said that Gettleman accused him of faking a knee injury and saying that he wasn't really hurt. I mean, it seems that Dave went after all the big guys.
Well, you know, again, you know, we sit here and talk about it.
We don't know. We're speculating.
No, but I think there's some validity to that, because, again, look at the track results, right? When you come in to an organization, I think this coaches have a tendency to do this. General managers have a tendency to do this. Certainly owners have a tendency to do this. You want to put your stamp on that organization, right? Well, let's go back to Jerry Jones when he first buys the Cowboys. What's the first really controversial thing he did? He fires a guy that's basically the face of the franchise.
The man in the hat.
Yeah, the man in the hat. And so that was more about, in my opinion, it wasn't that Tom Landry couldn't coach. It was more about, I'm going to show you who's boss.
Dude. Right.
And I think there's a tendency for guys to do that when they come into organizations, because you obviously, it's an ego-driven business, Neil. Let's not forget that, mm-hmm. right? So you want to put your stamp on it. You want to show that you're the guy in charge, that you're the boss, and yada yada yada. And you know, there's some, you know, there's some, as we say, there's always risk, and the risk is you alienate people, and once you alienate people, it's only a matter of time before, if you're winning, it's all good, right? You're going to Super Bowls, it's all good. But when you have the kind of year they had last year, obviously now the people above you, and I'm talking about ownership, are going to start to ask questions. And, you know, what's the environment? What's the pulse of the team? What's the environment in the building? And, you know, again, I think those are the things that got Dave Gettleman more than his decisions on who he drafted or what he did with the salary cap.
One more thing about general managers in general, Jeff, and then we'll move on to what the Carolina Panthers do next. But, I mean, I still feel, you're right, you mentioned it there about how it's not all about scouting, but it does seem to be that former scouts are the ones that are always being hired now as general managers, with a high-profile exception recently being John Lynch. And John right. Lynch seems to be a people person, and I wonder if you're a John Lynch or a John Elway, you can hire good scouts underneath you. At the moment, we seem to be seeing the majority of the positions filled by scouts. But with this now becoming increasingly about how you deal with people, I wonder if we'll see more John Lynch types filling those positions in future years.
Well, I think, again, Neil, it all kind of runs in cycles. So if, for example, the 49ers have a bounce back year and a turnaround, and you know, all's well in San Francisco again. Now ownership is going to look at that model as the way to do it.
Sure.
Right. So again, why do people normally come? You know, that administrative channel begins as a area scout, then a regional scout, then a head of scouting, then a personnel director, and then you know onto the general manager's chair. It's because they have dealt with most of the things like the salary cap, like the draft, all of those kinds of issues. But again, just being successful in your evaluation of players or, you know, how you manipulate the cap, that's only one part of the deal. You've got to remember that, again, it's a people industry, and what kind of environment do you create in the building? And you know, if you create a positive environment, you can weather storms a lot better than if you create a divisive environment.
Yeah, and certainly seemed to be a bit divisive in Charlotte. I know Steve Smith Sr. told me that Dave Gettleman didn't even tell him to his face when he was released. He had to find out from somebody else. So what next for the Carolina Panthers? Because here we are now, we're 8 days away from training camp now as we discuss this. Greg Olsen and Thomas Davis have made it public that they want new deals. Olsen has already said he may hold out. This is interesting, Jeff. I saw this story because you talk about, maybe another reason why Dave Gettleman was eventually pushed out the door. There's a belief that a lot of the best players on Carolina's roster were actually selected by Marty Herney. And I know when the Panthers went to the Super Bowl and we recorded a podcast, you made a point of saying, well, actually, let's pay tribute to Marty Herney and the team that he's built. And now Herney, who still does a lot of radio work around Charlotte, he's being floated as a potential interim general manager for this coming season.
Well, you know, again, that would make sense. He knows the building, he knows the ownership, he knows the people. I don't know how that divorce actually came, how much animosity there was in that. But certainly that would be a logical choice. The other logical choice would be to, you know, elevate somebody from within. But, you know, again, if you look at the fact, again, as we said earlier, the fact that Brandon Bean's not there, he was the logical successor. Again, this is going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And, you know, again, obviously, if you're Ron Rivera, the last thing you want 8 days before training camp is some controversy swirling around your football team and some outsider come in. Even if they hire a guy in 2 days, come in, you know, 6 days away from training camp, and now what kind of working environment are you going to have? You're not exactly on the most solid of grounds as a head coach. There's a lot of distraction that you just don't need as a football team.
Yeah, we had a question on the Brandon Bean thing from Roger Grace, so thank you for that. Let's take some mailbag questions, Jeff, just to finish up this week. And we'll start with George Wicks, who says, having watched All or Nothing with the Arizona Cardinals, is the hands-on approach taken by Steve Keim and Michael Bidwell typical of an NFL team? So he was talking about how, the general manager and the owner, they seem to be out at a lot of practices. Jeff, certainly in my experience, I've seen the general manager is always seems to be out at every practice to me, but not so much with the ownership.
Well, I think you know, Mike Bidwell's a kind of a different guy.
Sure.
Again, you got to understand too that he grew up around that team.
Oh yeah.
You know,
he
was a ball boy. He hung around practice. I think he loves football. I think he loves, obviously, the Cardinals are in his blood. And you know, when he came back, I think that was a really good move for the Cardinals. He's done an amazing job there. What I found fascinating, as I watched that series, was there was one clip where Arians was in a staff meeting with Bidwell and with Keim, and it was a post-game evaluation. They were talking about personnel. They were talking about the game. They were talking about situations that came up in the game, how the game, the flow of the game, all of that stuff. And obviously, in that case, you got a guy who is very hands-on. You know, obviously in Dallas, it's very hands-on. And, you know, there are other organizations where it's very hands-on. There are also some others where it's not so much. The Steelers typically have not been a real hands-on organization from ownership down. It was more about creating an environment and then letting your people work. It's I think, more and more this way. As you talk to football people, you know, a lot of the older coaches say one of the changes, one of the dynamic changes in the NFL was it used to be that owners just basically owned the team, and you know, you might see them every once in a while. But now the owner a lot of times is very, very, very prevalent in the media. I mean, Jerry Jones has got his own radio show in Dallas. So he's talking about injuries. He's talking about the players. He's talking about – so that's really kind of a unique kind of present-day NFL situation. In the old days, it wasn't like that. You know, again, ownership wouldn't get actively involved, you know, on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, you know, when Coach Vermeil was in St. Louis, you know, obviously – He had the end of the year reports and all that stuff, but it wasn't like a post game. Every post game, the owner's sitting down and wants to know, you know, how this guy played and how that guy played and why you handled this situation. I mean, but that's now very, very, very much more prevalent. I know when we're in Kansas City, the Hunt family, you very rarely saw them. You saw Mr. Hunt maybe 2 days at training camp.
Well, they live in Dallas, don't they?
And that was it, right? But again, typically now the owners are much more hands-on. Like even in the case of the Patriots with Mr. Kraft, Mr. Kraft is very, very, very upfront and in center in the media and all those other things.
Sure.
And I think that's probably the trend. It's more that way now than it's ever been.
All right, a couple of other questions that relate to All or Nothing, which you can still watch the Rams one on Amazon Prime, the Los Angeles Rams. And this question sort of relates to Hard Knocks as well, Jeff, because that'll be starting up soon with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this year. They're both kind of great, just great windows for the fans to go inside the locker room, inside a team building. But are they also a chance for other teams to gauge people? Because we got this question from Adam, who says, do scouts and personnel staff use All or Nothing or Hard Knocks to inform themselves on decisions when it comes to signing free agents? So, Jeff, I doubt they're looking at how a guy runs, but you might look at how a guy acts. What do you think? Do they watch that stuff? Does it have any weight?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because those things are a peek into not only the player, but the coach, all of it. You know, kind of a behind. Anybody can sit in an interview and answer the questions well, and you know, it's just whether it's a player at the combine or a coach that goes in to interview for your job. These kinds of quote reality TV shows or whatever you want to call them about inside the NFL, I think they're fantastic. And again, it's more information that you can gain. So, for example, if there's a hot coordinator in the league who you may be considering if a head coaching opportunity ever comes available, and you get an inside view of how he talks to his players, how he deals with the media, all those other things. Like, for example, you know, you could really get a window into Greg Williams as you watched that Rams All or Nothing. The same thing's true about, you know, the Cardinal organization. the players, what, you know, how do they interact with one another? How do they handle hard coaching? How do they handle adversity? How do they handle losses? Well, it's all now right there for you to know, and it's more information that, you know, scouts and personnel people and owners and everyone else can use in their evaluation process.
Jeff, I'd say in my experience, if the TV cameras were there and seeing some of the stuff I'd see, I'd say it all matters, and it all, even tiny little things, you can take little examples of. So 2015, I think I told you this story, 2015, I'm at Jets minicamp in June, second to last player onto the field, players are jogging and running onto the field, second to last player out of the locker room and kind of strolling across the field was Geno Smith. I don't think that's how you want your quarterback to be acting. I've been in Minnesota last year when I saw practice start at 3 o'clock and Adrian Peterson roll out at 3:45. I mean, clearly showing that he could do what he wanted, and Geno Smith, to me, showing he wasn't that much of a leader. Tiny little things, I think they all can matter and they all say something to you.
Absolutely. We have a saying in pro football, you're evaluated in everything you do all the time. Mm. And, you know, for example, if you are looking at a potential general manager or coach, right, in those kinds of things, you see windows into how they operate. So, for example, in that situation you mentioned with Adrian Peterson, well, obviously there's a star system in Minnesota. Mm. Now, that may be okay with you as a owner, say, or anybody who's involved in the selection of the next person, or it may say, nah, we don't want that here in our organization. We don't want, like the Patriots, I don't think Tom Brady strolls onto the practice field second to the last player.
Right. Right?
Again, that's not the way it's done there. So it all comes down to, you know, fit, and everybody has to understand, players, coaches, equipment guys, owners, scouts, general manager, you're always evaluated every day in everything you do.
Yeah, and I think those TV cameras, what they pick up is kind of the same sort of stuff that I see. You know, rookie year, Cordarrelle Patterson with the Vikings, one of his own staff trying to put the microphone on him, and he's like, get off me, I know how to put a microphone on. And you just start to think, maybe this guy's going to be difficult to deal with, and now he's not in Minnesota. I think all of those things you see when you watch All or Nothing or Hard Knocks, you can take something that you learn about the player, and you can certainly put it to a sort of bigger picture. It is interesting for fans to see what we in the media see sometimes, Jeff.
Yeah, and you know what, Neil, even as a coach, I watch it very, very, very closely, because I want to see how those guys handle tough situations.
Sure.
You know, how in the case of the Cardinals, where, you know, Arians handles a disappointing loss or injury to Carson or whatever it was, because those are things that you can learn. Those are, in our industry, in the coaching industry, you're basically, everybody's going to go through the same series of events: success, failure, losing players, you know, heartbreaking losses, tremendous wins, and you can gain information and you get a feel for guys that handle it well, what they did well, and then also guys that didn't handle it well as a safeguard to, hey, I don't want to be that guy in that situation. So to me, they're fascinating and they're phenomenal to watch. And whether you're a casual fan or, you know, a guy in the industry like me, I'm sure the players do the same thing. They watch those things, you know, like, you know, keeping up with the Kardashians used to be.
Yeah. I asked that at the fan night last week. One of the players was asked about All or Nothing being in it, so they asked Tyrann Mathieu about being in it, and then Johnny Hecker was in this one, and I asked Joel Bitonio of the Browns, he was on stage with, I said, do you watch it? And he was like, yeah, I don't watch it during the season because I get enough football then, but he said, trust me, I record everything, and we all watch it around the league. Everyone's watching. They all want to see how other teams are treated, what other players get that they don't get. I mean, they're all looking out for that stuff, Jeff.
Yeah, and, you know, think about it, if you're an owner, there's two ways to look at that process or that, you know, inside embedded journalistic deal. One, if you're trying to, you can look at it, as I said, in two ways. You can look at it from a positive standpoint. Hey, this is a great chance for us to you know, advertise, if you will, the way we do things, the way we treat players, the environment in our building. Or you can go the other way and, you know, and say, well, I don't want that, you know, kind of basically fight the process. I'm going to tell you something. The best way is be positive with it and embrace it and look at it as an opportunity to show it's basically a showcase of your organization. And, you know, again, I think the teams that have handled it well and used it as a positive, you know, come away from the experience, you know, feeling good about it.
All right, one more question to wrap up this week's Inside the Huddle, and it's a good one, Jeff, and one that you're well qualified to answer, because I know there have been times when you have been invited to seek work elsewhere, as you put it a couple of weeks ago. So this question comes from...
It won't be the last time either.
No, let's hope not. This question comes from Hugh King, who says, All or Nothing showed the business of the business. How important is a coach's network to help him get a new job?
Well, I think it's a network industry, you know, and everybody wants to know. You want guys you can trust. You want guys who, obviously, anybody can draw X's and O's. Anybody can do those kinds of things. There's so much more into it. And it is a very, very network-oriented business. That's why you see guys go from one team to another team typically. You know, it's hard. It's a hard business to crack. And because, again, nobody wants to take a risk on somebody that's never been there, done that. And, you know, when you are given the opportunity to seek further employment, as we say, you know, you rely on your contact base. Again, you start to, you know, let people know that you're looking for work, and, you know, your agent goes to work and starts contacting teams and owners you know, again, that's how it works. I mean, here's the reality. You look at any, I mean, you take any of them. There's so few guys that have never gone through that process in their career. A lot of guys have gone through it, you know, 5, 6, 8, 10 times in their career. It's just part of the business. And if you can't deal with that, then you don't belong in the business. Or if you coach out of fright, that, oh my God, if we don't get this turned around, I'm going to be out of here. Well, then again, you're probably not doing a great job of coaching the guys that you got right now. And, you know, your focus is wrong. And, you know, it's just a reality. It's that, the way I describe it, it's that vulture that's always circling.
Right. You know?
And that's just our business. I mean, it's that way for the players and it's that way for the coaches.
Jeff, I remember I've seen it a number of times when we're at the Super Bowl together, we're on the road together, and your phone rings and it's a young coach who's worked for you in the past, or a player who's played for you is in coaching who, you know, sometimes they just need you to put in a good word for them and they've been fired, or and then you hang up the phone and then you just turn to me and say, this is a, well, you use a word that I'm not going to use on this podcast, but you say this is a messy business. It's just kind of what you sign up for, but doesn't mean you have to like it all the time, does it?
Nope. And you know, you're exactly right. I believe in this to my core. It's a great game. It's a tough business.
Yeah.
You know, now I'll use tough because of this, we're on the podcast. But, you know, I mean, that's just, it is. It's really tough. It's tough on players, tough on coaches, tough on families, tough on everybody. It is not a, you know, it's not a business for everybody. You better have some thick skin. You better be, you know, you better be resilient. And, you know, again, I think of a guy like Wade Phillips, one of the greatest defensive coaches in the last 40 years. And 2 years ago, he can't get a job.
Yeah.
He can't get a job. Yeah. He gets let go in Houston, can't get a job, and Kubiak is able to bring him to Denver. He gets another opportunity. And, you know, at way into his career, at the, you know, at, in a lion in winter, as they say, he gets a Super Bowl ring. And, you know, again, I'm happy for guys like that, because, you know, you would think that there'd be as soon as a Wade Phillips gets let go, there's a line of guys waiting. Well, sometimes it doesn't work that way.
And Jeff, you can be in, I mean, Wade, when that happened, had been coaching, what, 40-odd years by that stage? If you don't think it bothered him, I sat next to him in the draft when we did the draft on Sky. Man, it bothered him. It was an insult. It was a slap in the face. And I think when he went back to Denver, he wanted to kind of show the NFL what he could still do. Because, so even you can be in this business for decades and you're still going to have that pride. You're still going to have that alpha male ego that you talk about. It's never going to go away. And that probably makes him the coach he is today.
Well, I think you better have that in this business. You better have that kind of... personality, because that's typically the personality that succeeds in this business. You got to believe in yourself. You got to be highly competitive. You got to, you know, all of those things. Now, Wade kind of, you don't see that in his natural demeanor, because he's that South Texas, slow talking, real nice guy. But I'm going to tell you something now. He is a competitor. And like you said, when he was given the opportunity to seek further employment, you know, that's going to rankle you a little bit. Because,
oh, yeah.
I mean, he's got, it isn't like he doesn't have a body of work now.
Right.
So that's just, but again, that's just the way the industry works.
All right, Jeff, we are out of time. Fascinating insight from you today, mate. I mean, your Hamilton Tiger Cats may be winless, but you have been a champion today. That was
well. I better get to work, or I might be Wade Phillipson now.
Really, really fascinating, especially to hear the stuff around the general managers, all of that stuff that goes on inside professional football. So thanks for that, Jeff. Good luck. Are you playing this weekend?
No, we play Thursday. We got the first game of the week this week. We've got another undefeated team in here.
Oh.
So they just, I, you know what? Sometimes you feel like Vinny Pazienza is a buddy of mine, right? And you see the movie. He's got a great movie, Bleed for This.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel like that boxer that's cornered in the corner, and it's just you're just trying to get to the bell.
All right, just kick him in the balls and run. Good luck anyway this weekend, Jeff. Until next week. On Inside the Huddle, when we'll be on the eve of NFL training camp. Say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.